This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I have the great pleasure of talking to Shama Haider Kabbani. She's the author of actually one of my favorite books on social media and social media marketing. It's called The Zen of Social Media Marketing, an easier way to build credibility, generate buzz, and increase revenue. And this is a revised 2012 edition. We'll talk about the fact that it's so difficult to keep up with the change in social media. So, you know, this book may be updated frequently, I think. Hi, Shama. How are you?
Thank you so much for the kind words. I'm doing well and glad to be here.
Well, it is a great book. I mean, I think that you have captured the essence of what I mean, of course, I agree with you. So I think you've captured the essence of what social media means and how marketing, therefore, is connected to it. But I also think that there are many, many insights in your book that I found kind of crystallizing for me. You know, there are those kinds of insights where you read it and you say, that's exactly right. I hadn't thought of that before. So I want to give you a lot of credit for being very clear.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, and it's really well organized. I think you start in the right place with principles and then move from there, into application. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the beginning of the book. But before we do that, maybe you could just talk about or tell me how you came to be involved in social media marketing. How'd you get here?
So, yeah, I'd be happy to give you a little bit of history on me and on the book, because we're talking about the 2012 edition, but, you know, I originally wrote the book in really late, in 2009, and my start in social media came through graduate school, and this is where social media wasn't really a buzz phrase yet. It was known by very few people, and I did actually my graduate thesis, I was writing a thesis long before I wrote a book, on Twitter and why people use Twitter. It was just fascinating to me at that time. And you know, this was a time when Twitter had 2,000 users, not the 375 million something that it does today. So clearly a big shift. And when I got out of graduate school, I felt very passionate about this subject matter, about the industry, not that there really was an industry at that time. The path that seemed to be the most straightforward was to work in consulting and help their clients with the new social media stuff that was on the horizon. However, most companies did not share my view. In fact, I had 18 rejections based on, hey, social media, you know, that's something my kid does. Can't imagine, you know, our client, the big airline company, ever using this. So after a lot of that, I decided, you know, I have a different perspective here. I think I'm just going to forge ahead on my own. And I did. So that was my start in social media. And I wrote the book originally, The Zen of Social Media Marketing. The original first book was as an ebook. And really it was because I had so many people asking questions that I didn't have the time to answer every single email, and it got very overwhelming quickly, so I needed to have something that I could direct people to. However, there was nothing out there that I felt served as a primer that would give people a sense of, here's what you do, here's how you do it, here's why you do it, and really simplify it. You know, there's a lot of great books on theory, and of course now there's tons of good stuff in the marketplace, but at that time there really was nothing that spoke to people in general, and simplified social media. And that was my goal with the original ebook, which I wrote and published in like less than 2 months.
And so it was that book, well, aside from that book, were you also practicing as a consultant to companies at that time and helping them create social media strategies?
Yeah, so when I got out of graduate school, I started my own business. And it started with social media consulting for strategies for businesses. And of course, since then, it's grown to being, you know, a full-service web marketing firm, and we've got 30 employees now, so I don't nearly do as much as I used to. I don't wear nearly as many hats as I used to. But yeah, so at that point, and even now, we, you know, just are at different scales, and I started, it was, you know, the local businesses that I was helping with social media. Now we work with a lot of national campaigns and such. But yeah, this is, you know, I was looking at sort of three perspectives that I tell people that I come from. One is this academia, this academic in me that still reads papers and scholarly magazines and journals to get a sense of that perspective. And then, you know, the practical. Here I was working with companies, helping them setting up their Facebook pages, explaining why Twitter wasn't a waste of time. And at the same time, I was trying to build my own company through social media marketing. You know, we've never done any other type of marketing except social media for my own firm.
Well, I think that's actually, no, that's a great perspective to have. And of course, you have the, you know, your own experience to draw on as well, that you can tell people who ask, you know, not only what should I do and why should I do it, but how did you do it, which is a much, you know, it's kind of, people want to know whether you're authentic or not, you know, that you really know what you're talking about. And
it meant a lot to me to be able to walk the talk, you know. Wasn't like I'd set up my account yesterday.
Well, so let me talk about a couple of the I mean, you know, the really basic first principle in the book, you right away describe this methodology that you've come up with, which you call ACT, A-C-T, Attract, Convert, Transform. And I thought it was really helpful as a kind of organizing principle to lay that out. I think people are, when they think about social media, they're kind of confused. They, as even you alluded to earlier, where people early on said to you, it's the stuff that my kids do. Now, of course, today everybody in business knows that social media is not just an activity that you can write off as meaningless. Of course, it's where millions and millions of people are spending lots and lots of time. But I think they have trouble conceptualizing how it works. You know, they're not used to this change, which you talk about, and I think, you know, it's something that I talk about with my clients too, and that is that previously marketing was about telling your story. And just telling it over and over again in many different ways, in hopes that you would connect with an audience. And it was, I always kind of consider it megaphone. You know, you're standing on the corner with the megaphone and you're shouting as loud as you can to as many people as possible. And the theory always was, you know, with advertising and information theory, you have to touch people five times before they'll even know you. And, you know, for many, many businesses, that kind of advertising and marketing and promotion didn't work even then. You couldn't afford it. You didn't have the right product. You couldn't reach people because you couldn't get down into the weeds and find people who really understood what you were doing and would connect with you. And what you outline here, which I think is absolutely right, is that social media changes the equation. It turns everything into conversations and interactions rather than speeches and talking. You're talking with instead of talking to. But even then, see, and this is why I think your methodology is really important, that even once you recognize that, you then have to figure out, well, what do I do? How do I actualize that? And I think your outline kind of lays it out very clearly. You have to attract people. And then this other thing that I thought, this is another insight that you had that I thought was really powerful, and that is not everyone that you interact with has to become a customer in order for this to be valuable. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how you got to that understanding, and then how do you explain that to your clients and people that you talk to?
Sure. So we talk about, you know, really there's two types of conversions that happen, and the formula was to try to simplify online marketing and social media for folks without making it too simplistic, but to give it, just like you said, a great way, you know, to organize essentially all these different things that you can be doing, and to give those tactics some sort of overarching strategy, if you will. And the C is for convert, which stands for, you know, converting, of course, we usually think of customers. Someone walks into the store and buys, you know, they go online and they buy. But there's another type of conversion that happens long before a customer or a client occurs, and that's really the consumer, someone who buys into your ideology, who says, I will connect with you. They give you permission at some level to begin this courtship dance, right, or this process of turning into a customer or client, and that happens over time. I can't tell you how many times we've gotten an email that says, you know, we'd like to work with your company. I've been following your work for 2 years. And I think 2 years, really. And so what I talk about in the book in terms of, it's really sort of a spectrum, if you will, right? There's people who are at a 9 or a 10, people who are buying, who are customers. And then there's people at the 1 or 2 who are just getting to know you. And then you have all these people at the 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. And these people are interacting with you at a different level. And especially because not everyone is ready to buy immediately, if you will, right? It's a process. And this allows you to keep that process going. You alluded to this earlier, too, where you talked about, you know, you can't stand on the corner of the street with a microphone. The thing was, people had some relative success, little success, but they still had some because, you know, people would gather in the town square, but to me, that there is no town square for all means and purposes. And this is something you talk about in the book, how we as a demographic have shifted. In fact, just this morning, I was listening to a fascinating panel on NPR, and they're talking about marriage and how people, you know, between 18 and 24 are now less likely to be married than ever before. And the reason why that becomes important is because, let's say you were targeting women in the 60s, 50s, and that's really not that long ago. It was fairly easy to figure out who that person was. You know, chances are, if you're a woman in her late 20s or 30s, in the 50s or 60s, you stay at home, you go to church on Sundays, you have two kids, maybe a dog named Spot, right? You fit into this mold. But today, there is no average. That average has shifted. So it's all about giving people options of being able to connect with you. It's just different avenues. We're extremely spoiled. I talk about the rise of this very needy consumer. That is us. And then us as the producer having to rise to meet that demand. And you see this in publishing, right? Just think, 10 years ago, how do you get a book? Hardback, paperback, right? Two choices. How can you get a book today? Hardback, paperback, Kindle, iPad, MP3. I mean, really, there's 1,000 ways now to consume that same piece of information that before was available in two formats. And so you may have, you know, and it's not like 50% of the people prefer this and 50% prefer the other. It's much narrower. You know, 10% of the people want the iPad edition, 15% want the Kindle, 35% want the actual book. So you've got to rise to that and then offer that, right? Meet that demand or risk losing visibility within that group.
Right. No, and I think, do you find, and I think, well, I'm going to guess that you do, that people will say to you, whether they run a business or they're doing marketing for a business of any kind, that what you've described is a much more difficult environment for business. So that, you know, when you, and one of the things you said, I noticed that when you're talking about blogging, you said, you know, you have to be really good at it. You have to be great. You can't just do a humdrum job. You've got to, and I would sort of say that that's sort of like saying you have to put your heart and soul into all of this, that you really have to believe in it. You have to get involved and participate and love communicating with your audience, your customers, all these people who may or may not be eventually consumers of your products. But I think that's hard for a lot of businesses. You know, that you feel it, that
right.
people got into business with that. They didn't originally feel like that was part of the job. That, you know, it doesn't, and this is not necessarily whether you're old and, you know, you've been doing business for 50 years one way and it's really hard to change. And I think that is true for a lot of companies, that, you know, you get into a pattern, and everyone who's in the business has strengths and weaknesses, and the business is built around those, you know, the market and what needs to be done, and the strengths and weaknesses of the people who are in the business. And when and it's really hard for people to change. So what do you say? I mean, this is the reason I asked this question, is what do you say to a client who comes to you and says, or somebody who's read your book and says, Your book is phenomenal. It's just incredibly motivating, as I think it really is. But what do I do? How do I keep this up? How do I become great? That's not something that's really necessarily inherent in everybody. You know what I mean? And how
And
so.
I acknowledge that. Acknowledge that. When someone comes to me and says, "Oh, this is hands down, this is a very tough environment. Your competition's harder. The market's a lot more segmented. But you have a chance. The company that before, if you have television, radio, it's only the companies that are making the mega millions at that level that would be able to advertise, right? So it's either go big or go home. And here, at least, you have the opportunity. If you are creative and you are passionate and you have some, even if it's a smaller budget, you don't need millions of dollars to make a splash. Just check out, the Kony 2012 video that's been going around, created by a nonprofit that's gotten so much steam lately, and there's so many other examples like that. So certainly, yes, the atmosphere, the environment, it's a lot more competitive, it's a lot more challenging, but there is a platform for creativity. You also have the ability to reach people like you've never had before. And that's important. So I say start there. My other thing is also, a lot of this can be overwhelming. And I try to simplify that in the book and talk about picking two or three channels and doing them consistently. You don't have to run after everything that's new under the sun. If you have the budget, you have the resources, great. But, for a lot of people, if you don't, focus on a few things and do them consistently and do them well, and then look to provide value. Essentially, what you're asking is what I get asked in a different way, which is, my company's pretty unsexy. It's uncool. What we do is not very cool. So how do we build a base in social media? And I say, that's not a problem. It's about being valuable to people. It's about providing relevant content when they are ready. So I look at social media, and I think it is a piece of the puzzle, a much bigger puzzle, and an important piece, but really just a piece of a bigger puzzle. And you still need all those other elements. You need good content. SEO matters, which is why we've dedicated a whole chapter in the book to it. All these other elements are really what's going to produce the highest ROI for a business. It's not going to be just tweeting or Facebooking.
So, well, let's talk about let's supposing that somebody came to you and said, "Okay, here's my business," and this hypothetical business has a product, and it looks like they really could use engaging with their customers as a changing the way they do business would be really functional for them. It would really work, but they have limited resources, and they say, "Look, I've read everything you've written, and I think Twitter is really interesting. Facebook is really cool. Maybe blogging, SEO, all of these things, but I can't do them all. So where, how would you kind of focus? And again, I know that's difficult because every business is different, and for some businesses, it may be a different combination of others. But would you tell them to start with one thing and then gradually become more comfortable with it and then move to something else? Or do you think that they need to do, let's say, an integrated Twitter and Facebook approach? Or maybe if LinkedIn is better for them because they're selling business to business, ignore Facebook and don't worry about it. Maybe do LinkedIn and a blog. You know what I mean? It's sort of, if you could only do a couple of things, does that make sense?
It does, and you hit on this, is what are your goals? What are you trying to do? For example, we have clients who outsource their marketing to us, right? All their web marketing. I'd say 80% of our clients give all their web marketing to us. And for one of these clients, they do social recruiting. They're not looking to market. They're looking to recruit salespeople using the web. And for us, the most powerful thing has been LinkedIn for them. It's not been Facebook or Twitter. It has been LinkedIn. So of course, we focus our efforts there and creating good content. For another client, the Dallas YMCA, we did their Turkey Trot, which is the biggest event of its kind in the country for Thanksgiving. And it's a huge trot. People come from all over the world. And for them, we found that digital PR was really effective. Going after bloggers, getting them to talk about the event, building buzz in the blogosphere, if you will. So everything is going to look different. A lot of it is also styles. I had one client who said, God, you know, I just don't get Twitter. I never could do this. And then God decided to tweet once or twice and really took to it. We have another client who likes to blog alongside with us. They let us do it because they know it will happen consistently, and it'll be good quality, but he really does love to blog, so he jumps in and and writes. So it's also about finding a fit that is natural for you, looking at your audience, and sometimes, yes, trying different things to see what works and what feels comfortable and what gives you the best ROI.
Oh, that, and you just raised another really important point, which I think is really worth talking about. When you outsource, which I think, you know, for a lot of companies in, or individuals, I think about this a lot because, you know, I talk to writers all the time, and writers will often say, if you add up all the hours in the day, there's no way I can do my work as a writer. And this is probably true for anybody who's a sole practitioner, a business, you know, whether you're, you know, maybe a consultant, or you are maybe a plumber, or anybody who only has that person, your own self, to do all of the work, almost always will say, I just don't have time to do all of my work, market myself, and, you know, do the taxes and spend time with my family and, you know, clean up after myself and, you know, fix the car. I mean, there's a lot of things to do when you're by yourself. So sometimes those people, and even in businesses too, might want to export the work and have somebody like you. Maybe it's a small company, maybe it's a large company. But when you do that, this question is always raised, and that is, how can somebody else be me? How can they take me, you know, my kind of approach to the world, my company identity, my individual business outlook, how do they, and how can they do this without appearing to be a fake in some way? You know, you always worry about that in social media. You don't want anybody to pretend to be somebody that they're not. So when you take on that work, when somebody outsources to you, what do you do? How do you make the distinction between working for, let's say it's the YMCA, but you're not the YMCA itself, so how do you do that?
We make it very clear. You know, when we reach out to bloggers, we don't say, oh, this is the Dallas YMCA. We say this is on behalf of. It's very transparent. It's not, you know, who our clients are is not, you know, something that we hide behind. But I'll tell you, there's a difference between a company and an individual. If someone is a professional speaker, you know, it's going to be very hard for them to outsource their voice because it is. But for example, one of our clients is a LASIK clinic. On that front, we're talking about the latest eye care, you know, techniques that are out there, different medical. I mean, there's so many different elements that we are able to speak at, because at the end goal is in their case, value, right? It's to drive value to the people that come to the site. It is to provide information and education and be helpful. And we're able to do that on their behalf. But yeah, I mean, you know, there is transparency, and I don't think anybody expects, I mean, you know that every company does not have their CEO out there using social media. I mean, that's clearly not how it works.
Although there are, there are examples, and very successful ones,
CEOs. But not everyone's going to do that. You know, right. I mean, you've got, for example, we have, of course, I have Twitter and Facebook and so forth. But the folks in my team, they said, you know, we really want a marketing Zen fan page. And I resisted that myself, and I talk about this in the book briefly. And I said, you know why? I am the face of the company. I'm happy to represent. Why do we need this for the company? And they said, well, you know, so we can, again, it was a matter of, you know, people looking for us and saying, hey, I couldn't find your page on Facebook. So we set it up. But, you know, a lot of times they're posting a blog post on there because it is the marketing Zen group. It's not just me. And so we have other folks out there who are sharing on our team, you know, that are authorized to share information on there. Not that you would never do that on my personal profile, because that's mine, but there is a difference between your personal and your, you know, your company image, if you will.
Well, and what about, I guess this, you know, I think about this a lot because I really think LinkedIn is very important, and many companies seem to and maybe even many business people, really don't recognize how powerful LinkedIn can be. And I mean, you talk about it extensively in the book. But again, let's supposing you're a, you know, you're talking to a person and it, you know, they should have a LinkedIn profile. They're going to have to go and create their own connections for the most part, because you wouldn't know, you know, you couldn't outsource the personal knowledge that they have of who all their business contacts are in LinkedIn. So I think the only way, or I'm guessing, or maybe you can tell me differently, but if you're working for someone on LinkedIn, at least at the outset, the person would have to make some of their own connections, I think, before you could do that for them.
It really depends on, personal profile versus the company, because now LinkedIn also offers, companies to have their own pages and to set that up. So there's lots of different elements to be able to do that. And of course, like I said, it's not a secret. There's no magic curtain behind which anybody that you outsource to is really hiding. But I think at the end of the day is if they know what they're doing, and as long as it's not replicating a certain voice, and that only comes into, again, very specific cases. Like, again, if you're a professional speaker by trade and you're hiring someone to be able to do some of the stuff for you, then there may be, a slight disconnect there. But generally, sometimes companies have multiple folks who are working on their behalf.
Well, and it seems like you are yourself incredibly well connected now through having been online. Do you think that you would recommend to anybody that if they kind of dive in and start participating in conversations? And I think you talk about that very much, that it isn't about it's not a one-way conversation. That people, I think, often do this on Twitter. They do it on Facebook. It's announcing what I'm doing today, or announcing what my company just did, or this award I just got. There's, without setting up a kind of social context for that, those become meaningless. That no one's really going to pay attention if all you do is take out your trumpet and start playing. Whereas if you, as you said in here, one of the key principles is to listen. And as you said, listen and then whisper rather than listen and shout. But would you recommend to people that, assuming they've read your book and they're following your rules, that, one of the ways that you can really build your network and build business is by participating?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a huge part of it, right? Connecting with others, building that community. And here's the beauty of it. When you build that community, they're going to want to know things like that about you. They're going to want to share in your success. It's when you haven't built that goodwill, if you will, that you're going to struggle with that. And I always tell people, it's not about the quantity. It's a lot more about quality. There was an article done by Wired magazine a while ago where they looked at bands, musical bands that were successful that were not major names. Meaning, and by successful, they were defining them as all the members. This is what they did full time. They didn't play a gig once a week with their buddies. This is what they did for their living. And they had families and they supported themselves. And so they were looking at a series of bands like this, and we really found the magic number, and I'm not saying this is right for everyone, but 1,000. It was the fact that they had 1,000 loyal fans that would buy every CD, that would watch all their YouTube videos and share, that would drive to wherever, they were performing and support them. And it's very true. Your company doesn't need millions of likes. It doesn't need hundreds and thousands of people cheering you on. You really need that community of people that you are engaged with, and that who feel like what you're doing is valuable to them.
No, I think that's actually a very, very important thing. I'm really glad you said that, because it is quality, not quantity, for most of us. I mean, if you're a major brand, you're a car company or something, you're going to get millions of people. It may be, as you kind of think depth versus breadth. That big ocean of people may not be deeply engaged with those brands, but I think you're absolutely right, and I think the band analogy is really good. I think for a lot of people who are creatives, whether they're writers or musicians or filmmakers, you make video, or you dance or you do theater, I think you're absolutely right that you don't need multiple thousands of fans. You need a small group of really dedicated people, and I think makes it a lot easier to when you think about engaging in social media. Then it's less scary because when people start going after, I want to have 100,000 followers, then they're engaging in all kinds of crazy activities in order to build their numbers, when really it isn't useful, and it kind of is distracting from the real work, which is to engage in conversations with people. You can't talk to a million people in a real conversation, even on Twitter or Facebook. You can, there's a kind of limit to the number of people that you can have actual relationships with. So
Those relationships are at different levels, I've had people come up to me at conferences. I swear to you, I have never talked to them, but they seem to feel like they know me very intimately. They'll ask about my dog, they'll ask about my family, they'll ask about work. And so clearly, they'll say things so much. They find about you, you're more valuable. So you do. I mean, you do end up building these relationships on a mass scale in some ways that you don't always know about even, I mean, that's not rare, and I've heard that happen to a lot of people. And I think, again, it all boils down to providing something of value, giving people something that they find useful. And I don't think anybody finds what someone had for breakfast particularly useful.
Not
which
well,
is why I
well,
wanted these
not unless you're
conversations.
Ashton Kutcher or somebody like that, where people are fascinated with celebrity and they don't, they're interested in anything
Yeah,
that
and that's a
celebrities
whole
do.
different phenomena, though, isn't it? I mean,
Yeah.
this whole celebrity, watching and gazing, so.
So, I realize that you must keep up with tremendous amounts of information, and I saw you added social, or kind of the group buying phenomenon to the new edition of the book. And but what do you when you look ahead now? Let's because I have to consider you a maybe an maybe you're an expert now in social media. So looking ahead, because we assume that things change all the time, new things are coming, like Pinterest. Old things are maybe declining. If you're looking ahead, and I know I'm not asking you to, predict the future, but just seeing what you're seeing today in the sort of social media fabric, in America, maybe, or elsewhere, what do you think is going on? What do you think is maybe the new thing, or what's different than it was a couple of years ago?
I mean, and Pinterest is a good example. So I'll talk about this. Curation is, I feel like, the next thing. And I tweeted this a while ago. I said, we're moving from the age of information to an age of relevancy. There was a time where people said, oh, I surf the web as a hobby. Do you remember that? People would say, I like long walks on the beach and I like surfing the web. It was because, yeah, the web had 500 pages. Technically, you can spend an evening and surf the web. And today, that, I mean, it sounds, you can't surf the web. But we've gotten to this point where we're so information hungry. Now we feel like there's this information overwhelm. And we're moving towards curation, sites, networks, things that allow us to take information in at our level that make it more streamlined for us. And Pinterest is an example of that because it really curates images from all over the web and puts them neatly and organizes that information for us by people, by categories, and so forth. And I think that's powerful. And we'll see more of this information being now more. And that's why, even though there's millions of blogs, like the top 50 blogs in the world get 80% of the traffic. And that's because they bring together some of the best content out there. So we will see a rise in curation, sites that help us streamline, focus, organize our online lives and social media efforts.
And one other thing I wanted to ask you about before we go, so maybe this will be the last question I trouble you with. What you talk about video, and I thought you did it in a really good way. You make it kind of easier to accept the idea that, let's say, I could make a video podcast or something. But do you feel like video is something that is still underused by business, by professionals, people who are trying to tell their story. Are you really recommending people to use video whenever they can?
I do feel that it is one of the most underutilized tools out there. And yes, by all means, I recommend people do it because, you know, video used to be a big deal in the sense that it took a lot of production. You needed multiple cameras. You needed, you know, I mean, we didn't have the technology that we do today. Today, for less than $500, you can pretty much have your own studio, you know, in the corner of your home office. So I'm always surprised that even though the ability to produce videos is so simplified now, that people don't utilize it. And it is powerful. And it goes back to this common theme, this theme that I'm really stressing in the book, which is your people want information in different formats. It's your job to rise to meet that need. It's like back in the day where, you know, at some point we became shocked when a company didn't have a toll-free number. Then we were shocked that someone didn't have a website address. People remember those HTTP website addresses used to be a big thing. Now, the people are shocked when you're not on Twitter or you don't have a presence on Facebook. So yes, as consumers, we're very demanding, but we are that consumers. And unless we as a society decide otherwise, it's going to be up to us as marketers and producers and content creators to rise to fulfill that demand or risk losing that group of people.
I think that's great. I wish we had more time because I think I could ask you questions for a lots longer. Now this is great, and I want to recommend your book. I think this is, you know, a key book for anybody who is either, and it doesn't matter whether you're already doing social media marketing. I think you can learn a lot from this book. So it's called The Zen of Social Media Marketing. It's by Shama Hyderkabbani. It's the 2012 edition. You can find her at thezenofsocialmedia.com. And I really want to thank you, Shama, for talking to me and taking some time out of your, I know, very busy day.
So, I really enjoyed our discussion. Thank you.
Thanks. This has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Thank you very much.